The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Successful people can be at the top of their game in the business world and as parents, but it can sometimes be difficult to stay above it all. Now it's time to learn from an entrepreneur who has made this a reality. Welcome to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris and his guests will share ideas and experiences to help you manage your life in business and as a parent. Now, here's Chris Efesiou.
Hello, everyone. It's good to have you with us today. We all know stories of people who have gone from rags to riches. They're all impressive. Today, you're about to be treated to a man who not only has done that financially, but more importantly, he has done it emotionally. And he has dedicated himself to helping others do the same. Bob Danzig went from foster child to CEO of Hearst Newspapers, and is a professional speaker. His stellar career began as a teenage office boy at Albany, New York, at a newspaper there called Times Union. 19 years later, he was named publisher of that newspaper, and shortly thereafter became CEO of all Hearst newspapers. He authored The Leader Within You and 8 other nonfiction books. Bob is the dean of the Hearst Management Institute, the corporation's leadership enhancement program. He was awarded Journalism Fellowship to Stanford University and taught the Confidence Course at New School University in New York City. He was named to the Speakers Hall of Fame in 2007, is the first recipient of National Speakers Association Philanthropist of the Year Award, and first recipient of Champion for Children Award from the Child Welfare League of America. And it is truly my honor and privilege to have him as my guest today. Bob, thank you for being with us.
My great pleasure, Chris. Your voice is so assuring.
Well, I hope it stays that way for the balance of the hour. But we don't need that because it's your voice we want to hear. And there's so much to talk about and so many intriguing things about you, including many things you just told me 3 minutes before we got on the air. We'll get to that. But let's just jump on this thing. You know, you didn't exactly start life with a silver spoon in your mouth. And usually, I don't want to stereotype, but most, there are obviously some shining exceptions, and you're one of them, but most people who start from such difficult beginnings, their attitude is colored, and I'm not going to get into what they do professionally and the like. That's a different thing. Their personality is almost not complete. You have more to give, and you have given more than any 10 people I know. So how does one start from where you started, and what lessons do you learn as a result of being an abandoned child in foster care?
Well, there's a few things, Chris, that I hope are responsive. I went into foster care when I was 2 years old. My parents divorced, and they put me in the system, and I lived in countless foster homes. But I had a few blessings, and I was open to those blessings. One of those was a social worker who was moving me to yet another foster home when I was 11 years old. Her name was Mae Morse. And when she gave the name of the family, she sat down, she took my hand, and she looked me right in the eye, and she said, "I want you to never forget, you are worthwhile." And every time she met with me over the next year, she was my social worker, she ended every conversation by saying that to me, never forget you are worthwhile. Before I met her, I felt like driftwood, just going from family to family, never fitting in, never any friends. I just barely functioned in school. But her words gave me something to hold on to. Her words let me feel like a person. You are worthwhile. I held on to her words throughout the rest of my young life. And then when I got my job as the office boy at the newspaper in Albany, it happened that the office manager, Margaret Mahoney was her name, had been a foster parent. And she told me later on that when she found out I came to the foster care system, it had sent her to take an interest in me. And one Saturday morning, we were both covering complaint phones. She said, I want to see you in my office. I was scared to death, Chris. I was going to be fired. And she sat down. She said, I've been the office manager here for 15 years, and I've been observing you. And then she leaned over the desk and said to me, I believe you are full of promise. It was a magical moment, Chris. That moment, she gave me permission to have ambition. I never forgot her words. They lubricated everything that happened to me after. I went to college nights for 5 years. I got this journalism fellowship at Stanford University. I ended up being publisher of that newspaper with 1,250 employee colleagues. Her words and Mae Morris's words were ringing in my mind. So the lesson, I think, is to be open to the encouragement that comes your way. Hold on to it. Let it be your armor when you're facing adversity and disappointments and setbacks. I had many. But the other thing I took from the foster care system was the fact that my energy was just on surviving. Just survive. And that instinct to survive matured into perseverance as an adult. So that when severe problems came my way, business issues, whatever they may be, I could just persevere right through them. That's another lesson. Choose perseverance.
Choose perseverance, not just survival.
Absolutely right.
I mean, what a service of that social worker did for you, that, you know, giving you the permission to know that you're somebody, you are worthwhile. And then, again, the office manager giving you permission to be ambitious. And there are some listeners who are probably scratching their heads and they're thinking, well, you know, what's the big deal? Those are things that, you know, my children know that they are worthwhile to me, and they're expected, or they know that they should be ambitious. But the point I'm trying to make here is that the simple things are not necessarily that simple. And things that are complicated are not necessarily that complicated. And the point is that those are free words that you're worthwhile, and free words that you are going to be somebody, yet in the hands and in the mind of the person who is hungry for them, they are manna from heaven. And it's a lesson to be learned and remembered. So many people have ambition, many people, you know, want to persevere, but not many people go from office boy to CEO. Kind of take us down that trip.
I'm happy to. I early on went in the Navy for 3 years. I was a radioman in the Navy. And the guy, the bunk mate above me, his name was Bob Myers, had been an NYU English major. He joined the Navy because he had a broken romance, and he brought with him all the great modern library books. I had never read a book, Chris. We're bobbing around the ocean, this ship, and he adopts me. He has me read these books, and he tutors me in the nuances of the books, writing styles, the character development, and all that type of thing. So by the time I left the Navy, I was really rich in understanding of great books. I then go to college nights as an English major. And the college I went to had a little literary publication called the Beverwick. And they English majors were encouraged to send a little essay, a short story, whatever it may be. And their style was to only use the first letter of your first name. Like, if you had been there, Chris, would have been C, F, and S, whatever, I'm not pronouncing your last name correctly, I know. But So I'm writing for this little essays, for this literary publication. I did not know this, Chris, but the publisher of our newspaper was on the board of trustees of that college. And he loved writing. And when they sent him all this stuff, including this little literary magazine, he plucked it out and read it, evidently. One day, I'm meeting in the elevator, just he and I. His name was Gene Robb. And he said to me, I see an R. Danzig at the college. Is that a relative of yours? I said, no, Mr. Robb, that's me. I go there nights. And unbeknown to me, Chris, for the next 3 years, he had my grade center after every semester. And I was a straight-A student because of that guy in the Navy. And when I graduated, he invited me to meet him for breakfast on a Saturday morning. I was scared to death. I'm a little twerp. I'm like a junior advertising salesman. And he told me he's going to retire in 12 years. And I decided you could be an optional candidate to succeed me. I'm going to put you in a program and learn everything about our business. But here's the deal. Whatever job you're going to, you must succeed. You can't be a crown prince. If you don't succeed, you have to leave. So off I went, became a production guy, promotion guy, I'm in the newsroom, writing articles. He nominates me for the fellowship at Stanford University. I get this fellowship. I'm out there living with 11 great editors, drinking in their journalistic greatness. I come back, it's now 6 years into the 12-year program, he drops dead. And I'm chosen to succeed him. Now, all I did was show up and be willing to accept the grace of other people that came my way in what I just described to you. And 7 years later, I'm in New York running the company. I couldn't get over it, but I heard those words, you are worthwhile, you are full of promise. And what I just described to you is a journey of being open to the good people who cross your path. They are there in everyone's path. It's a matter of you being open to receive them. The guy in the Navy, I could have said, I'm not going to read books, okay? You know, Mr. Robb says that you would go to Siena College. Well, I'd go there, but I'm just kind of going through. Whatever I describe them, the pathway of my life has been because I've been open to other people who crossed my path and extended their gift to me. It's up to me, though, whether I take the gift. That's true for every listener you have. It's up to them whether they take the gift.
I'm going to let your words echo and take us to a break a little bit sooner, because there's nothing I can say to follow that other than to say that we will be back after a short break. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris with Bob Danzig.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk. Yeah! If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epicu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epicu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Efesiou. My guest is Bob Danzig. Please visit his website, bobdanzig.com, and the last name is spelled D-A-N-Z-I-G.com, and follow him on Twitter at bdanzig. For information on this program, speaking engagements, and other activities, please visit my website, chrisefesiou.com, or straightupwithchris.com. My Facebook page is Chris Efesiou, and on Twitter, I'm Chief Daddy Officer. You are worthwhile. What are the words that changed Bob's life from at the age of 11, if I recall correctly, from a social worker? And he has taken that gift and ran with it to success at the highest levels. Bob, tell us, you describe the how you focus on certain tools to enhance confidence, because clearly, one thing that somebody needs to have to succeed, it doesn't matter how one terms success, but to reach it, you have to be self-confident. Tell us about those tools that enhance confidence.
Well, I'm happy to do that, Chris. As background, I taught the confidence course at the New York University for 7 years. All adults took this course, all right? And on the very first night, these are people signing up for something called the confidence course, all right? And the very first night, I had them write out on a card why they were at this course. And then I would calculate which are the key priorities that seem to be chilling people's confidence, which simply means living life with faith in yourself. And I found that there are a few, some won't surprise you. The number one fear people had was speaking in public.
Yes.
In any way. Not being a professional speaker, just speaking in public, all right? I found also that they had great difficulty having conversations with another person. I found that shyness crippled them. I found that worry was a toxic cloud that followed them. I found a series of these situations that chilled people's confidence. And I developed tools that I would share with the students, and then they'd go out during the next week, it was a weekly course, and they'd exercise the tools and come back the next week and tell me how they felt. How did they feel about that? It was amazing to see how simple tools provided people like an exercise would diminish that terrible lack of confidence. And so let's just pick one that might be on the minds of your folks here, okay, we're listening. Yep. Let's take shyness. Some of the tools that I found were effective for shyness is which usually accompanies people going into a group of people they really don't know anyone, all right? Mm-hmm. And if that's going to happen, they should think ahead of what they might chat with people about. Just think ahead a little bit. Fix a few items in your mind, okay? Then, when they meet other people, concentrate on trying to remember their name while you're talking with them. And then smile. Not a smile that you're staring at these people, but just a warm, gentle smile. Then ask gentle questions of the other person. Where are you from? It was New York City, how long have you been in New York, etc. Where, what school did you go to, etc. All right, so you're focusing on them. And the number one lesson is to go into these situations with the commitment to make the other person comfortable. When that's your mindset, it helps reduce your shyness. And the other is to not look in mirrors, not look in shining glasses, because when you see your own image and you're shy, it tends to cripple you up. You just get unnerved. So don't look at yourself in the mirror. And when you start to just remember, I'm just giving you a handful of these tools. I usually accompany the tools with stories because I'm a storyteller. But it's amazing once you give the people a little formula to think differently about an issue like shyness, it can be very effective. I'll give you one little story, okay? Mm-hmm. The very first time I taught this class some years ago, it was from 7 until 9 o'clock at night. At 9 o'clock, the class is leaving, and I'm about to go out. The door was open to the classroom throughout the whole evening. I walk outside, this little teeny Oriental lady standing there, and I ask, "Are you lost?" She said, no, my subway was 5 minutes late, and I was too shy to walk in the classroom in front of the strangers. So I stood here in the hall for the 2 hours and listened. And I got her name, Dr. Caroline, and I said, "Well, you're most welcome to come back next week if you wish, but there's a price of admission. Or you can just withdraw from the class, and I'll get your money back." She said, "What is the price of admission?" I said, "Well, if you choose to come next week, you must stand up and tell the class why you stood in the hall tonight." So the next week comes, it's 15 minutes late. The seat next to me is open, the door is open, and I see this little black stocking peek through the door. It is followed by Dr. C, Dr. Caroline. And she came up, she sat down, she said, "Good evening, Professor." I said, "Good evening, Doctor." And I said, "My memory is it was a price of admission you'd agree to." She said, "I understand that." And she stood up, and she told this group of strangers why she stood in the hall for 2 hours, because she was too shy to walk in the room in front of the others. And then, Chris, she declared, "This is the first time I've chosen me over shyness."
Wow.
So we cover a series of these tools for people. As a matter of fact, I have a new DVD series, will probably be out in July, called The Confidence Academy, where I'm just sharing all these lessons with folks and telling stories that help make the point. Now, how did I come to do this? How did I come to teach the Confidence Academy? Well, a pal of mine, who was the president of Parade Magazine, taught this course called The Confidence Course. And I used to go do an occasional motivational lecture for his students. I didn't know what the course was. And one night he called me and said, "I have a conflict. Would you come teach my course?" I said, "Walter, I'm not a teacher. I know nothing about your course." He said, "Well, I'm going to send you a book of mine that's about the course, and then maybe we can meet for dinner next week and let's see how you feel about it." So he sent me the book, or a very easy-to-read book. And I met up for supper the next week, and I said, "Walter, no need for you to come. I'm going to teach the course, but I want you to know why. Because I think I can end up creating confidence clubs for kids all over America. But first, I'm going to create the Confidence Academy for adults. I'm going to take all that material, and one day, I will find a sponsor to bring these confidence tools to every kid over 12 years of age in America. And that's my next dream." So that's how I came to do this.
And what a wonderful story it is. And I don't think anybody within the sound of my voice is doubting that that dream will be reality in very short order. Let's take a few questions. Questions are coming in from listeners. This comes from Kira and Bea. She says, "Two of us are listening. Can you ask Bob to describe what an angel thread is? What is Bob's definition for success? And can you ask him to tell the story about what he tells waiters and waitresses when they say, 'No problem'?"
It's a triple. It's a triple query.
It's a triple. Exactly.
Well, let me start with the end, okay? Yep. Very often when we're served by somebody else, we thank them, they say, "No problem."
Right.
And I say, "Would you like a gift for life?" They say, "Yes." And I said, "Well, you know, when you say no problem, those are two negatives. And they subtly push a mind away from you. If you could just cultivate the habit of saying, 'My pleasure,' those are two affirmatives. And they'll draw people to you. And once you get the habit now of doing this when you serve other people and take that into your professional life, and you don't say no problem, you say my pleasure, is going to lubricate the pathway of your life. The second is what I call the success. What's the definition of success? It's the imprimatur you leave on other people who've been in your path. Chris, you're doing that every single week as well as the rest of your professional life. You're leaving imprimatur on other people. To me, that's the greatest success. To have left a message that motivates other people to lift their own lives. And the first question was about angel threads. Well, I believe that everyone has a tapestry of life that's being woven. And in your tapestry, certain threads are more brilliant, more enduring. And when you think, Chris, of your major life changes, you shared one with me before this conversation about that teacher at your college that gave you a new insight to go in a new direction rather than the medical school.
Yes.
He was in your life path. You remembered him instantly. Well, I think that people, when they shut their eyes and think about those who are in their path to endorse, encourage, or guide them, that they can see those people. Now, they could be in your path for a random coincidence, if you're comfortable with that. Or I believe they could be the tool of an angel whispering to that person to offer you that thread. But it's up to you to take the thread. If you don't take it, it goes right on by. That professor could have had that same conversation with 500 other students who said, well, that's nice, but you took it. And it ended up influencing the rest of your life. So I believe these angel threads are within our tapestry, and they keep coming to us all the time.
Yes.
In fact, I may have met you, I have a new reality TV show that's being pitched on the third week of May to producers called Angel Threads.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful. 3 minutes before a break, let's take another question. This comes from Catherine in Pittsburgh. She says, what an amazing story. I would like to ask Bob how he would advise young graduates from college and grad schools facing difficult job markets to keep from losing their confidence after many job application rejections.
Well, my view is to think small. Think small. Let's say you're a journalism major, all right? It's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the smallest newspaper you might be able to associate with, because there you're going to be paid less, all right? And you're going to learn more. So the way you justify that in your mind is you get a second job. You treat the second job as if you're getting a graduate degree. And what you're really doing is learning journalism by supporting yourself with a meager wage supplemented by the second job. That puts your mindset into your being in control rather than I can't find a job. You think small, and then you expand it to just take on the fact that you can have more than one job. When I was the office boy at the newspaper in Albany, I worked nights and weekends at a fruit and garden, a fruit and vegetable outside stand.
People do this
all the time in life, so you encourage young people to be open to their being in charge by thinking smaller about where they start and taking the experience to a larger element.
And having a second job is not diminishing, or should not be viewed as diminishing someone. It should be as acquiring and amassing more experience, because
it's graduate school, Chris. It's graduate school.
It is. It is. It absolutely is. I was going to ask you how many jobs you had when you were in college, and you answered that question. And you know, I recently was having the same conversation with someone, and when I told them how many I've had, they laughed. They said, "How did you do anything?" I said, "Well, I slept little, but I did what I had to do."
Absolutely. What a great phrase, though.
Yes.
Huh?
Indeed.
I think the hill is there to be climbed.
Absolutely.
That's how I feel about it.
Absolutely.
But you've got to put a foot on the hill if you're going to climb it.
Isn't that the truth? We'll be back after a short break with my guest, Bob Danzig. Stay with us.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epiciu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epiciu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epiciu. My guest is Bob Danzig. Please visit his website, bobdanzig.com, and follow him on Twitter at bdanzig. Bob, your book, titled The Leader Within You, which, as I was telling you on the break, as I was putting my notes together for this show, and I read about the book, I kind of looked up on my shelf and there it is. But for the benefit of our listeners, you have some very good points that I would consider key points from that book. Can you share those with us?
I'd be delighted to. First of all, the book came about because I was hiking with a bunch of my pals at the time. We were commiserating about what I call the overmanagement of our society, downsizing, right-sizing, everybody being tossed out of their jobs, etc. And I said to my pals, you know, in this process of overmanaging, we're blunting the role of leadership that built so many great organizations. Somebody ought to write a fresh book about that. And my pal said, well, Bozo, why don't you write that book? I said, well, I'll give it a shot. So I took 140 people I had met, and I wrote profiles of them, Chris, and I found a rhythm to the qualities in them that they had gifted to me. And then the publisher said, this looks like a textbook, so we got to choose about 40 of these people. And that's how the book got to be the size it is. But I found a rhythm to include these, all right? That leaders are nurtured, and they take those natural qualities they've got, they hone them. They discover them, they nurture them, they hone them. And they have a commitment to quality. Whatever they do, they want to do better than average. Doesn't have to be hugely better, but they have a commitment to quality. They are their own engine of inspiration. They don't wait for inspiration to come from outside someplace else. They're their own engine of inspiration. They bring a palpable passion to whatever they do. They have an incessant curiosity for the next. What might that be that's going to improve the life of our company and my colleagues, all right? Mm-hmm. They also do more than is required. It's a very interesting habit, Chris, to just do more than required in everything in your life. You do that in your preparation. I was bombarded by all of your reminders and messages, etc. Those weren't required, but you're in the habit of doing more than required. It's a powerful habit. The other thing I find a great, great gift in effective leaders is they learn to listen.
Mm-hmm.
They work to understand, and they're sources of encouragement in their organizations. I'll give you an example, all right? We had these newspapers all over the country. We had 6,000 people. Now, I'm sitting in New York City. How am I going to be a source of motivation for these 6,000 folks? Well, what my assistant, Marge Murphy, did every day that I was in New York, she sent an email out to her people before that, a fax, said, Bobby's here today. She called me Bobby, a little insider thing she had. And by 4 o'clock that day, they had the name of somebody from their organization that had done some specific thing, what their home address was, and their bride's or husband's name if they're married. And on my train ride home, which was an hour and a half from New York City, I had my personal stationery, and I wrote a note. If you were one of our folks, I would have written a note to you, Chris, thanking you for the specific thing you had done. And if it was really well worth recognizing, I put F next to your name. And the next day, Marge would send flowers to your wife. And the card would say, congratulations, the good news for your Chris. If you'd really done something spectacular, you'd have a T next to your name. And Marge would send a Tiffany bracelet, or for a male spouse, a Tiffany key ring, with the same message, congratulations on the good news for your Chris. Nobody ever threw away a note I sent them, Chris.
Nobody ever will.
They brought them to work. They couldn't wait to share these. And, you know, so maybe I spent $30,000 a year on flowers, maybe $45,000 at Tiffany's. We paid a truck driver in San Francisco $75,000 a year. So it's the way you look at your resources. By the way, I got wholesale prices at Tiffany because we did so many. So my point is, though, that leaders celebrate their folks. They find a system to recognize people. And I bought $3 billion worth of businesses. None of them were bad. But if I walk through a place, I look for what I call the spirit quotient. All right? We had accountants there, marketing people, everybody else doing their stuff. I walked through looking for the spirit quotient. It was kind of neutral. I would say, God, this is fabulous. Because we can nurture this spirit. And we'll take this business from good to excellent. Because what creates excellence is when the people of a place are recognized and their talents flow more robustly. You don't mandate that. You cultivate it. And you cultivate it by recognition of the people. I know what moved me from being the office boy to my very next job. It was that single thing said to me, I believe you are full of promise, all right? Well, when you send notes and you recognize your folks and you mean it, that's why I sought the specific thing they had done. I sent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of notes, Chris, sitting in New York City.
Yep.
To San Francisco, Seattle, Houston, San Antonio, all over the country.
Yep.
So the notes matter most. The flowers and the Tiffany were just a little frosting.
Exactly. And there is nothing that speaks better than you know, two words of recognition, thank you. But, you know, as simple as it is and as little time as it takes, I don't know why more people don't get into the habit of doing that and reaping the rewards, because what you did was recognizing somebody's performance, but you also boosted that person's performance because you knew that now they were so mentally and emotionally invested into what you have done for them that they will never let you down.
And I'll give you one tangible example, Chris, okay, and then we'll get off the business stuff. But we acquired a major business for $400 million. In the first year, we never invaded these businesses, okay? In the first year, they made only $400,000 on a $400 million investment. And I realized that they were market warriors. They had been owned by a charity. They didn't have to make any money. So I began to go there every Tuesday, seeking that spirit ignition, seeking it every Tuesday, brainstorming with the folks, okay? Never mandating. Once they got into the rhythm of a new set of objectives, and so the talent began to flow. And the next year, they made $163 million.
That's pretty amazing. But believable, because that's how people get motivated. It isn't the numbers. It's the people behind the organization and the people that lead. Yeah. Let's take another question. This comes from Bill from Minneapolis. He says, what an amazing story. While growing up in foster homes, you must have encountered many difficulties. How did you keep your spirits lifted and avoid succumbing to despair?
I hid. I practiced being invisible. I hid. I was never abused, but I lived in the neutral zone. I lived with families with birth, natural birth children, and many of them had me with them because it represented some financial assistance.
Yep.
So the attention to me was minimal. So I hid. I hid in school. I never raised a hand. I tried to be invisible. I spent most of my childhood trying to be invisible. I had one situation where there were two girls in the family. They were young teenagers, and I was maybe, 8 or 9 years old. And they put me in the attic. I slept in the attic. And the light switch to put the light, single light bulb in the attic was outside the closet door with the stairways. And I was always being punished for something these girls did. And I used to go up there, and the light from the moon would be coming in occasionally. I would count. They had these slats in the ceilings. And I would count the slats over and over and over again to try to overcome my feelings. I had such a lump in my throat all the time of sadness. I called it lumpy. I literally called the lump in my throat lumpy. And one night, I was so overwhelmed by criticism. I'm out there in the dark. I'm terrified. And this is a second-story flat. I opened the window, and I shimmied down the porch post, and I went all the way down, and I ran to the school, and they were doing some repair work at the school. They had a big green dumpster, and I remember leaning there in my little T-shirt and my pants and saying, I'm just trash. I'm just like this dumpster. I'm just trash. A teacher came along and found me. They called the social services. They went and saw that I was being put in the attic, and they took me away from that family. So I spent all those years invisible, hiding. And I got to tell you, Chris, once I took a hold of those 8 words, you are worthwhile, you are full of promise, I've never hidden again.
You had permission to be out in the open. You gave
no
yourself
question.
Permission.
No question. No question. In fact, when I wrote The Leader Within You, people began to call me and ask me to speak about leadership. I wasn't a speaker. I was a businessman. But I said, wouldn't this be fun? And once again, I came across one person, a lady in Michigan who had a speaker's bureau. She took an interest in me. We met in Chicago at the conference hotel there once a month, and she tutored me on how to tell stories. She made me tell my story from my foster care experience. I hid that. I never talked about it. She said, people don't care whether you ran a multi-billion dollar company. That's a kind of, you put a finger in her throat. But She said, when they know that you came from what you came from to this, that gives them an inspiration for their day. And she cultivated me as a speaker. I ended up being the Speakers Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
I can't get over it. All I did was show up.
Well, but anybody listening to this interview, they know exactly how you got there, and also the value that stories carry. I mean, you have not been teaching here. You've been telling stories, and nothing is more enjoyable than that. The teaching is contained within. So,
excuse me, Chris. I need to interrupt you for one other great, great lesson.
Please.
I have 5 children. Those children could not be more adored than they are by this father. When you've never had a family, the privilege of a family causes you to adore them. Not just have them, not just love them, adore them. My 5 kids know I adore them.
And it is, I was going to ask you about that later on, but it is such a powerful statement that you're making. And that kind of rings true in my life. I was fortunate to have a very good, very loving father, but that father was the child of 2 parents, especially a mother and his biological father, whom he never knew, and his mother had kept him away from any kind of contact with his biological father. That man, who had never been loved as a child, showered us with love and affection and true care more than anyone could ever imagine. And understand what you're saying and appreciate it because I've lived it from the other end, from the child's end. And that's a powerful and a wonderful thing. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris. My guest is Bob Daszak. We'll be back in a moment.
News, opinion,
hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epicu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris. Real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epicu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epicu. My guest is Bob Daszak. Please visit his website, bobdaszak.com, and follow him on Twitter at bdaszak. So when I first spoke to you, Bob, you told me that you are the father of five biological children, as you mentioned just in the previous segment. You said, I'm a dad of eight and a granddad of 14. You've been the CEO at Hearst Newspapers for 60-some years, and you've managed all of that. The obvious question is, and you, on top of that, you said you adore your children, which kind of answers the question that most people could possibly be thinking, well, you know, he's been so busy at work, what has he done at home? How have you balanced the busy, hard-driving, very demanding position that you had by day to being a dad adoring his kids at night?
Chris, I speak to a lot of CEO groups, and often we have Q&A sessions. I'm speaking to one this Wednesday, as a matter of fact. And so these questions often come up to me. In fact, it's kind of a guarantee. How do you balance your life between your professional demands and your family demands? I always say to them, you're not going to like my answer. Because my answer is this. I left my home every day with a briefcase. I came home every day with a briefcase. I never opened a briefcase at home. My kids thought I sold briefcases. Because when I walked out of the door, I was on my way to run a multi-billion-dollar corporation. Unless an emergency, I didn't want to think about anything except my affairs and business, all right? When I walked in the house, I was there to be a father. And they deserved 100%. So my answer to people ask what the balance is, it's kind of simple. Just be 100% of whatever you're doing. Now, you have to make some decisions with that. If you're not going to open your emails or whatever it may be or the briefcase, then that's a choice you make, and you let people know. Unless it's something urgent, people respect that. So I think you just choose to be 100%. I'm a 100% father when I walk in the door. My week has to be 100% a dad to my children. And by the way, usually we have five biological. I have four biological, one adopted. My fourth child's adopted. And then Diane and I, we're a new marriage. We're both alone and gone, or our spouses were gone. And she had three daughters. So now we've got eight. We got these 14 grandchildren, okay? You know, keeping up with the birthdays is a challenge by itself, but we do. And when they come to be with us, now I'm kind of busy, Chris. I still do a lot of things. But when they come to be with us, they come to be with us. And we better be with them. So I think that business people, professional people, have a simple formula that they can consider. In your professional life, be 100%. In your family life, be 100%. That's all you can be.
And it is so simple and so true and so amazingly powerful. We have about 5 minutes left. I'm going to ask you to tell us about your start button. You also said that to me before we went on the air, and you said, you know, I want to start every day by pushing that start button. What does that mean to you? And also, how give some insights to our listeners as to how they can keep their own finger on their start button.
Well, I'm 81 years old, Chris. All right, and I'm always looking for the next thing to do. That's been true since the day I stepped down from being the president of our newspaper company. I went on to become quickly the dean of all of our leadership programs for the corporation. I wrote my first book, and it was published on purpose in February after I left my office on December 31st. I went on a nationwide book signing tour. I planned to do that, so I had something to go to. And I think one chooses to live their life by having something to go to, by keeping their finger on the start button. It's not too complicated. What can I start next? It doesn't have to be dramatic. It doesn't have to be some breakthrough thinking. It doesn't have to be becoming a professional this or professional that. It's about what am I going to do next that enriches my life and may bring some insight and joy to other people. I mentioned earlier, I just finished making a 4-DVD series on the Confidence Academy. All right. And we'll be marketing that next summer, etc., okay? I don't know where these things are going, but they're fun to do, and none of these things would happen unless you put your finger on the start button. So my view is that everyone listening to this, no matter what their current situation is, should be thinking about, what might be my next start button? Doesn't mean starting over in your career. Doesn't mean starting over your marriage. Right? Just what would be interesting to start? I have a pal here in Florida who was the head sales guy at a big auto dealer, all right? And in his downtime, he became a whittler with wood at the auto dealership. Now this guy has started a business whittling beautiful things, all right? It's his next start button. And I meet all kinds of people whose finger is on the it's over button.
Yeah.
That's a choice. Yeah. That's a choice. So I know the next things I'm going to be doing. I just met you earlier. I wrote a reality TV show proposal. It's being pitched in mid-May. They asked whether I'd consider becoming the guest host for the first six series while they with some network. I said, sure. I go to Los Angeles for a week or two and end up being the host of this thing. And then who could I line up to be guests, etc.? But that's all the next start button. I wrote five movies last year. I have an agent now. My wife and I are now writing a new movie treatment based on the book we did together 2 years ago called Shakespeare Lives on Cape Cod. That's all being on the start button. It's simply a choice one makes.
Yes, indeed it is. And two things I have to say. One is, count me in for your show. And two is, when I grow up, if I'm lucky enough, I want to be just like you.
Oh my goodness. Well, Chris, it's been a delight to deal with you and to share these with your audience.
It is. The delight has been mine. It has been truly my pleasure, and it is such a wonderful experience to actually discuss life with someone who lives life to the fullest, regardless of age, regardless of time, and regardless of they embrace not knowing what tomorrow is going to bring, but they plan for it, and that is, in my mind, the key for always staying mentally young. And on that note,
if you decide, Chris, that I could be another guest on your program, believe it or not, I've got other stuff to talk about.
Bob, I've been doing this for a little bit more than 2 years. I could have you on the show every week and never run out of things to talk about. So, lovely to have had you, and we will definitely circle back one more time again. Thank you so very much.
My great pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
I hope you'll join me next Thursday at 6 p.m. East, 3 West on Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk for Business and Parenthood. Until then, seize the moment, every moment, at work and at home. We'll talk more next week. I'm Chris Efesiou. Thank you for listening.
Thank you again for tuning in to Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk on Business and Parenthood. Please join your host, Chris Efesiou, again next Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time and 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Make it an engaging week at work and at home. Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.